For most of my life, I've been a baseball fan. Some may think it's because I played the game from age 9 until I was 18 in very competitive leagues. I extended that because I also played softball for the first 10 years of my grown-up adult life, and that's kind of like baseball, isn't it? I simply translated my love of pitching and defense to a medium where the focus is truly on the hitter. I saw some terrific things during my lifetime. The timeless Nolan Ryan and several of his no-hitters. Cal Ripken breaking a longevity record that truly astounds in that it brought up all the longevity records from other workaday people who never miss a shift. The simple joy of Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa chasing a home run dream, which of course was later ruined amid rampant discussions about steroids. The Red Sox broke their futility and won not only one but two World Series. I fell in love with the game with that first solid ping of aluminum against leather. It's a solid feeling that you feel in your guts and can't otherwise be described. But beyond that, I love baseball for history. There's a certain timeless quality to it. Small changes to the rules happen each and every year. Pitchers' mounds get raised and lowered according to the public's demands for offense. We saw the dead ball era, when it seemed that hitters were simply too good. The public demanded bigger, better, faster, more, and baseball responded. It came up with its juiced era, that eventually ended amid congressional investigation, shame, and the questioning of some standards that are held most dear. But the only reason that all of this happened is because baseball has rumbled along virtually unchanged for a century or better. When measuring the worth of a career, you have to put history in the mix. Is Albert Pujols or Derek Jeter a superior player to Hannes Wagner or Ty Cobb? The answer can only be yes and no. There's no way to replicate the conditions for either. Would Derek Jeter be as good playing for a steel mill team? Did Ty Cobb ever have a trainer, a nutritionist? Did he have video analytics of his every at-bat? The answer is always a yes and always a resounding no. The appreciation of the timeless quality of baseball has served me well in my profession. By the way, the collective sigh you just heard is from the mighty dozen of my listeners who just realized that I've come to my point. Cooking is and has always been timeless. It should remain that way forever. Now, I could elaborate on Sunday dinners served by my beloved grandmother, whose roast had the taste and texture of a hot, damp wool blanket. But this woman also was able to craft mashed potatoes and gravy at that very same meal into something magical that I'll never forget. She assumed that her oven only had two settings, 450 and off, and tended to cook that way. Being at my grandmother's table goes beyond anything in my experience and speaks to the more collective experience of those who cook for a living. Pirates, to be sure, but also slaves too, and students of history. Take a look at any great chef, and I do mean any great chef. Whether you're looking at a traditionalist, a fusion dude, a retro throwback guy, a fanatical classicist, or one of the mad scientists who respond to molecular gastronomy, they all have one thing in common. They know and appreciate solid, simple cuisine. You can't manipulate anything without knowing its nature. The same goes with people, but the human fallibility makes us a much easier target. I've never in my life met a vain squash or an insecure eggplant. Well, maybe a small Japanese eggplant could have some issues about their size, but then they could argue that they have all the taste in a smaller, more efficient package. However, this is hardly the point. During my recent trials and tribulations on the road to find a new culinary home, I stayed in a lot of hotels. Some were great. Others made me wonder how in the hell a hotel got stuck precisely here. The one thing remarkable about all these different properties is how different their menus are written, executed, and the bizarre nature of the names assigned to their various and sundry offerings. One such menu offended me so much I wrote a 3-page critique on it and gave it to the GM. Understandably, this was not the greatest of career moves, as the critique also included a fair share of sarcasm and snarky comments. It seems I don't have much of a filter. Lesson number 14, boys and girls, great sarcastic comedy will seldom get you hired. But I digress. Before you call me a knucklehead, as my mentor did repeatedly, please know that I stand by every criticism I level. I'm not the enemy of invention. If Ferran Adria wants me to realize the essence of a thinly shaved and glorious Serrano ham as it meets the juicy sweetness of a piece of summer melon by putting me in virtual reality goggles and a space helmet filled with melon scent, who am I to complain? If Gran Ackett's wants me to experience chicken piccata by tasting a piccata-flavored breast strip, I'm all for it. I'm stopping on the home to actually eat, but I'm all for it. The thing about both experiences is this. They both understand what the individual experiences are about. The sweet and salty rush. The feel of butter on your tongue. They understand the history. Hotel X didn't. Being a man of considerable girth, I love Eggs Benedict. The combination simply sings in a chorus that, when well done, makes the hairs on your arm stand on end. I also happen to like the variations. Eastern Shore Benedict, which replaces the Canadian bacon with crab cakes. Anything with a Chipotle Hollandaise, named Rancho This or Santa That. Hotel X had something on their menu, and I found it offensive. It was a combination of English muffin, Canadian bacon, poached eggs, and Hollandaise, and they called it a California Benedict. Well, how could I and the rest of the country have been so mistaken? Since the name was California, was I wrong to expect a lighter variation? Some sort of twist? At least throw me a damn avocado into the mix, which seems to be the definition of California cuisine to the rest of the country. Can you do that? No. Okay. Hotel X also had a sandwich on it called a Dippit, which was a thinly sliced roast beef with sautéed onions on a hard roll with a side of au jus that the sandwich could be dipped in before and after each bite. Now call me a snob. Call me overly critical. Just don't call me Shirley. Sorry, it's not the right time for an airplane reference, but it's late and I'm half drunk. If you're even the slightest student in the world of the sandwich, doesn't that sound like a French dip? The very same French dip rumored to have been invented in California? Was my critique valid? Yes. Was it particularly smart? Well, no. They say those who forget the past are doomed to repeat it. I can honestly say I certainly hope so. Great food has always been great food. Create, invent, but always remember that classics are called classics for a reason. Just think, in 20 years, this rant will still exist and still be an appreciation of all those great chefs who came before me and those who came after me. And I will still be and always remain a knucklehead. That's kind of comforting, isn't it?
Thank you for listening to A Modern Profession Podcast. For more podcasts you might enjoy and information on live shows and how you can get involved, visit amodernprofession.com or check us out on Twitter @AModernPro or on Instagram @AModernProfession. Thank you.